This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
نطلب ربي يعن عليا ويستجب في الحين سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي سعدي يا الحبابي
سعدي يا الحبابي
خلاني متلوف ومسبي
خلاني متلوف ومسبي
يا يعلم سيدي ربي رحيم الرحمن وانا بيه متيقن قلبي وبصاحب الفرقان وانا يا بيه متيقن قلبي وبصاحب الفرقان نطلب ربي حن عليا استجب بالعين سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي غرسي وتمر القاحي زاهي في لامان بعد الشوق شبيت بالماحي في غرام السلطان بعد الشوق شبيت بالماحي في غرام السلطان بحسن التلوين بحسن التلوين النسري ونوار العشية ضحك الياسمين الألا والزرنجية وين سعدي وين الألا والزرنجية وين سعدي وين نطلب ربي حن عليا ويستجب بالعين سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي وين شيخ الآلات تناوب وطيار على الغصان
تجاوب
والساقي مليح مؤدب يملى في الميزان والحسود مروق معذب ملعون في الشيطان والحسود مروق معذب ملعون في الشيطان نطلب ربي يعن عليا ويستجب بالحين سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي سبحانه عالم الخفية وين سعدي وين نقول الله يا الله على الرسول الله يا الله والمقبول الله يا الله يوم القيامة الله يا الله مشكي
العمق
الله يا الله
ارجلني العمق
الله يا الله
ليكو بسلامي
الله يا الله عشقي وغرامي
الله يا الله
عشقي وغرامي
الله يا الله
عشقي وغرامي
الله يا الله اثبتوا أمي رسول الله
A little bit more from the El Gusto Orchestra of Algiers with Abdel Hadi Hallo. Maybe we'll hear a little bit more of that later on in the evening, continuing with our delving into this disc from last week. We're also going to be continuing with our discussion from last week about the pirate crisis in Somalia here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade and listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City with me, Bill Weinberg. In fact, we've got a special guest who's going to be joining us by telephone in just a few minutes, who is Dr. Saad Noor, the North American representative of the Republic of Somaliland, which, as we discussed last week, is an actual de facto independent republic within what is known as Somalia in the media, none too correctly. And I say de facto independent only because its independence is not recognized by the international community. And it's a very ironic situation that southern Somalia has no effective government on the ground, but it has a government which is largely fictional, which is recognized by the international community. Whereas in the northern part of the country, Somaliland, exactly the opposite is true. It has a functioning government on the ground, but it has no government which is recognized by the international community. And the so-called government-controlled Somalia in the south is a war zone, whereas the part of Somalia in the north, which has no government which is recognized by the outside world, is a relative enclave of stability. So very ironic situation, and we're going to be at one which has gotten, despite all of the media attention about Somalia and the pirates and the warlords and the insurgents and the Islamic Courts Union and et cetera, very little acknowledgement that half the country is an independent republic, de facto independent republic. So we're going to be hearing more about this from Dr. Saad Noor. Once again, North American representative of the Republic of Somaliland. It should be very interesting. Please do stay tuned. I do have just one brief announcement, which is that maybe some of you are going to be going, as I hope to hear Eva Morales speak tomorrow evening up in Harlem. The president of Bolivia and the first indigenous president of any South American country. And then the day after that, which is going to be Thursday, of course, April 23rd, Sylvia Rivera Cusicanqui is going to be speaking at NYU, and she is a scholar, an indigenous Aymara scholar, and particularly a chronicler of Bolivia's indigenous movements and peasant movements, and in particular its anarchist tradition. So this is of particular interest to us here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. She is a professor of sociology at the Universidad Mayor de San Andres in La Paz, Bolivia, and is a prominent public intellectual and the author of numerous books on Bolivian history, politics, gender, and coca leaf. And I will add, anarchism, Bolivian anarchism. So I'm very, very intrigued to hear what, you know, her perspective as at least someone with strong anarchist sympathies, is on the government of Evo Morales. It should be very interesting. I'm going to try to be there, and if you're a Bolivia watcher, you should be there too. That's going to be happening April 23rd, which is Thursday, from 2 in the afternoon through 5 in the afternoon at the Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies at NYU, New York University. That's 53 Washington Square South, 53 Washington Square South. So is there a contact number? I don't see one. So if you're serious about going, you're just going to have to write it down. April 23rd, this Thursday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at 53 Washington Square South, just across from Washington Square. That's really 4th Street, you know. Once again, Sylvia Rivera Cusicanqui, indigenous and anarchist scholar from Bolivia. Okay, that's all I've got in the way of announcements. So you know what we're going to do now is we're going to hear a little bit more. I have a brief musical interlude here, just a little bit more from Abdel Hadi Hallo and the El Gusto Orchestra of Algiers while we put through our telephone call to Dr. Saad Noor, North American representative of the Republic of Somaliland. So do stay tuned. This should be very interesting. Okay, hit it, Abdel Hadi Hallo. Whoops. Hit it. Hit it. Thank you.
مال جفني يبكي بالدمع ليل ونهار مال جفن حبيبي صاحي من الدمع مال قلبي تلهب من نوم شاب النار مال قلب حبيبي ما هزت وقلوب مال عقلي يا ربي من جوار عيطان مال عقل حبيبي ما قاست وجوده مال سمعي طايح الهوى الحضار مال سمع حبيبي لهوي ما يطول مال جسمي نحل حتار صفار وكبار مال جسم حبيبي بازت وقلوب مال من قسم قلبي بالسيوف الشفار حز عقلي ورماداتي بالارجوع مال جفني بكي بالدمع ليل ونهار مال جفن حبيبي صاحي من الدموع مال جفني بكي بالدمع ليل ونهار مال جفن حبيبي صاحي من الدموع
أما الورقي شفتك من اللي عطل فرقك ما قلت يا ريح مدقت ما قلت يا ريح مدقت بعد غناك من بحورين شفت من شدت.
Dr. Noor.
Yes.
Hi, welcome aboard to WBAI.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you tonight.
So glad you could join us.
Thank you very much. The same here.
So you are the North American representative of the Republic of Somaliland.
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. So what is it? What does that work actually entail? And how does it feel to be the representative of a government which most people in America doesn't know exist?
Well, I mean, you know, it's not an official one because Somaliland is not internationally recognized yet. But nonetheless, you know, it's just like doing many, you know, things that envoys who are official and are representing other countries do perform. So, you know, I mean, it's a matter of just, you know, creating a situation where there will be connection and contact between the government of Somaliland and the government of the United States of America, basically. And it feels rather difficult because you feel that you are here, but nonetheless, officially, you are invisible. So it's somewhat tedious, as a matter of fact. It takes a great deal of patience and maybe some ability to deal with that kind of a situation.
Mm-hmm. So is there any kind of de facto diplomatic contact between Washington and Somaliland?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, that does. That's the reality of the situation. I mean, there are diplomatic contacts between Somaliland and the government of the United States of America, and a great deal of understanding, as a matter of fact, on many issues that concern both countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue of piracy is the one which happens to be in the news at the moment. So has there been any kind of moves towards cooperation around addressing that crisis?
Well, basically, I mean, the piracy phenomenon takes place actually in the part of Somalia, or what used to be known as Somalia, the former Italian colony of Somalia, particularly in the northeastern province of Puntland. It does not, as such, really concern Somaliland, but if anything that, for example, that calls for cooperation between the government of the United States and Somaliland happily would do that. And if there is any kind of a collaboration in any way, Somaliland would be ready to do it. And, of course, there are certain kinds of cooperation in the area of security.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe we could talk a little bit about the history. You say that what we might call government-controlled Somalia in the south of the country, even though the government there isn't really in control, that and the autonomous enclave of Puntland together make up what was the former Italian colony, whereas Somaliland is the former British colony.
Correct. That's correct.
And when did it achieve its independence in 1991 with the fall of the Siad Barre dictatorship?
The independence of Somaliland, actually, Somaliland became independent in June 26, 1960, from Great Britain. And from that time, in the same year, it formed a union with the former Italian colony of Somalia, which became independent on July 1st, 1960, the same year. But that union did not work. And eventually, there was an armed struggle on the part of Somaliland against that former Italian colony of Somalia. And that ended in 1991 when Somaliland re-proclaimed its independence in May 1991.
Mm-hmm. So what were the issues which led to the emergence of this independence struggle? Why was the union with Somalia not working?
Simply because it was a union that actually was created in a haphazard fashion. And the people of Somaliland were actually the ones who, in many ways, instigated that union simply because they felt that there was a need for the creation of what was thought to be or to become a Somali government that includes Somalia, that Italian Somalia, Somaliland, and what was then French Somaliland, and Ethiopian Somalia, and a part of Kenya, which was a colony even at that time, which is the northeast part of Kenya, used to be called Northern Frontier District. So the idea was to create that kind of a government which encompasses all the Somali-speaking communities in the Horn of Africa. But that did not happen. What happened is just that the guys in the south began usurping all the government forces against the people of Somaliland. They, for example, took advantage of the good intentions of the people of Somaliland. They provided the capital, which was Mogadishu, the president, the prime minister, the commander of the army, the commander of the police, you name it. And eventually it became a southern oppression against the north. So the north eventually had to react. And that became an armed struggle which ended by the re-proclamation of the independence of the Republic of Somaliland in 1991.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you pointed out when we spoke earlier, the union of Somalia and Somaliland was actually an exception to what had been the stated policy of the Organization of African Unity, that the colonial boundaries were to remain intact under independence.
Absolutely correct. It really, according to that, I do believe what happened, first of all, that the union did take place a little bit maybe ahead of the time when that resolution by the Organization of the African Unity at the time was passed in Addis Ababa, which actually made the union, you know, retroactively illegal because it changed the boundaries which were inherited from colonial administrations. And right now, Somaliland has been actually saying that all that Somaliland has done is to actually go back to that pre-colonial withdrawal boundaries, and therefore the Organization of African Unity, and now the African Union, should not exercise that principle, which is the principle of the inviolation or inviolability of the boundaries inherited from colonial administration. But unfortunately, both the Organization of African Union and now the Organization of the
African Union.
The African Union now and its predecessor, both of them actually have just never took that seriously, saying, well, eventually everybody is saying, look, we know that your separation from former Italian colony of Somalia is legal, as a matter of fact, but the problem is a political problem, and there is no political will thus far on the part of the African Union to address this issue the way it should be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the problem here, Bill, is just that, again, for example, countries like the United States of America and the European Union are saying, listen, this issue should be dealt with the Africans first. If the African Union recognizes Somaliland, then we have no problem with Somaliland. But the African Union is just a name. Actually, it does not have that kind of a capability like the European Union, which would never allow the continuation of such a thing. For example, they immediately recognize it, you know, the republics of the former government of Yugoslavia, and lately Kosovo. But African Union has never, thus far, since its inception, or the Organization of African Union before it, has not thus far recognized one single new entity.
Well, Eritrea.
Well, it was not actually, you know, Eritrea was a part, you know, was actually in a confederation with Ethiopia. And Ethiopia is the one that agreed in advance. If Ethiopia, for example, did not agree,
right,
the separation, the African Union would never have done anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so in 1991, Somaliland formally declared its independence. A referendum was held, I understand.
It was, yes, with the constitution that 79% of the people approved it.
Mm-hmm. And elections were held at this time?
Elections were held. I mean, we are about to actually elections of the... Actually, we created three political parties. We adopted the method of the multi-party system. We qualified three national political parties, and we held elections, you know, the parliamentarian elections. And before that, elections of the different governorates of the regions of the country, and elected a president and a vice president. And now, actually, we are preparing to have our second presidential multi-party system elections.
Mm-hmm.
There have been three. I mean, this president is the third one, but the first one actually was appointed. And second one was initially appointed, and then after that, this one was popularly elected. And from now on, it's a one-man, one-vote, multi-party system.
Mm-hmm. So the current president is Dahir Rigale?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And how long has he been in power?
I think this is his sixth year now.
Mm-hmm. So, and he was elected into office?
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And he's the third president, the second to be elected.
Absolutely, he's the first one to be elected popularly. I mean, by multi-party system, one man, one vote.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes,
the first.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first president was appointed because I assume he had led the independence struggle.
Yes,
and then the second president was also appointed.
And he unfortunately he passed away, and he prepared the country for this actually rather unique political Republican order, where he is the one really who put together the parts on the, the nuts and the bolts of the modern state for Somaliland.
Mm-hmm. And what was his name?
President Igal, Mohamed Igal.
Mm-hmm. And when you say appointed, appointed by the parliament or?
Appointed by a body of elders which were somewhat in a very popularly, which were appointed by their constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a council.
Yes. Council of elders.
Mm-hmm. Council, yes, of elders, right. Okay, but there has been a functioning parliament. It's a bicameral system, such as like the United States.
Yes.
For how many years now?
Oh, I would say for at this point, I would say from 1993.
Mm-hmm. And how does the country function? What kind of economy does it have? I mean, it's not recognized by any outside government, so I would imagine it doesn't have much in the way of corporate investment. Is it largely self-sufficient? I imagine there's a lot of fishing going on. What else is going on?
Well, really, I mean, it's livestock. That is basically the most important thing at this point that sustains the local economy. In addition to that, our people are very industrious, business, doing business with Ethiopia, with anybody, with everybody, with Djibouti. And also, remittances from our own diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
That helps a lot. But however, the country is well known to be an oil potential place. And there are all kinds of indications that actually we may be sitting on an oil glut. But because of the absence of international recognition, international companies cannot come because, to say the least, they say, look, we would love to come, but A, according to the international law, you don't exist.
Right.
And if you don't exist, we cannot insure, you know, our equipment, our capital, our staff. And we have no leeway, for example, if we invest in the place and something go wrong or you do us wrong, because we cannot sue you anywhere.
Yes.
So it's a very, very difficult situation. So, yes, you know, the country is far away from being self-sufficient at this point. But when you look into the situation and you see the people, you know, African countries around us who have been independent, for example, for 20, 30, 40 years, became independent the same time when Somaliland became independent in 1960. Many of them are not democratic. Second, they are not that better off than we are, despite the recognition and the heavy investment and foreign aid. None of them or majority of them can exist without foreign aid for 6 months. But we are standing without foreign aid, and we don't owe anybody a penny because nobody would give it to us to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually this is a very critical question. I'd like to hear your analysis of why the entity which people, you know, consider to be government-controlled Somalia has been a war zone and really has had no functioning government since 1991, whereas Somaliland in the north, with a government which is not recognized by the outside world, has had has been an enclave of peace and stability. How do you account for this seeming paradox?
It's a very good question, and it's a question that that has been raised a lot by many people, and you know, analysts and people who look at the history of the two places and what have you, this, you know, the people in both areas are Somalis. They speak the Somali language. But nonetheless, there have been, or there was, and many people do attribute to a lot of, you know, this matter you are talking, this question or this issue, they do attribute it to the different colonial administrations as one of the differences, maybe that really that have made this difference. That is, that the British rule on Somaliland was totally different from that of the Italian rule of Somalia. The British were, like they did in many other African places, like Ghana, like Nigeria, what they did is just that their rule was an indirect rule. In other words, they empowered the local indigenous political structure that was in place, and they controlled it from afar as a supervisor. While the Italians did not have that political culture within them, they penetrated the society. They went down to the lowest level, and they eliminated whatever local political structure that was there. And by the time when they left, there was nothing. While us, the British, when they were preparing Somaliland for independence, did it, you know, from the grassroots all the way to the level of a shadow parliament. So that is one thing. The other thing, I think, is just that, unfortunately, there is no cohesion. There has never been any kind of an attempt on the part of the people of Somalia, in that former Italian colony, to go and sit down and do what we did. We did ours from bottom up, not from up, you know, down to the bottom. We began from household, from the sub-clan, major clan, and up all the way to the regions and to the top. None of that has been tried in that place, unfortunately. Everything that has been happening in Somalia, whether it was supported, as it's happening right now by the international community, or by its inhabitants, they are trying to control everything from the top. It's, you know, top down. And that has been the problem. Unless someone comes with a solution for that and gets a handle on it at the level of the grassroots,
mm-hmm.
I don't think nothing is going to happen there.
Mm-hmm. And yet there was, you know, at least a functioning state in Somalia from independence in 1960 through the collapse of the Siad Barre regime in 1991.
That was the unitary government between Somaliland and Somalia.
Right.
And that government itself would never have actually functioned had it not been for the sacrifice made by the Somalilanders, who really presented themselves, you know, as a sacrificial lamb.
How so? Explain.
Simply because they gave all the power to them. They say, okay, when the Somalilanders get there, they were divided between two camps, the people of Somalia. And they were trying to say, no, we are going to, you know, to hold the power. The other one said, no, you are not going to do that. The Somaliland, they say, well, what are you fighting on? You have power. Here, take it, you know, and, you know, don't fight. I mean, let us create a government and let us hope for a better future. You know, the move, there are so many people, Bill, who would say right now, and there may be some truth to it, although I always reject it, that unless Somaliland goes back to that union, there will never be a Somalia. And we say, and I say here, through your program, hell no, never again, never, never, never again, like the Jewish community did say in the ghettos of Warsaw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so you feel that the union with Somalia was that much of a disaster for your people?
Oh, my God. It was more than disaster. It was a real excruciating pain and destruction. We have never got from that unity other than death, destruction, and deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what form did that take? I mean, what was the actual mechanism of oppression?
The Siad Barre, first of all, I mean, they disenfranchised us even before the military coup d'etat by General Siad Barre. In other words, you know, I mean, they send their own, rulers to our own cities and regions, and they treated us as a second-class citizen. Third, you know, I mean, in about 30 years of the union, not one single project, developmental project, was actually put in place in Somaliland. All of them were put in Somalia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nothing was given. It was just like, poor king, I mean, shunted and say, go to hell. No, you ain't going to get anything. And then when the resistance began, the city of Hargeisa, our capital, was totally razed. I mean, it was destroyed. 85% of the buildings in June 1988, the Somali Air Force destroyed the capital of Somaliland, Hargeisa. About 50,000 people were killed or injured, and 1.1 million fled as refugees to Ethiopia.
Hmm.
This is the first time when an Air Force flew from an airport of a city to bomb the same city.
Right.
Then after that, the Somali army was brought, and field artillery was used against the city. Mm-hmm. Instead of the aerial bombardment.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we, you know, I mean, this is what happened. You call that brotherhood?
Mm-hmm.
You call that unity?
Now, this received very little international coverage at the time in the world media.
It did not, because, for example, at the time, unfortunately, you know, I mean, because that was during the Cold War, as you know.
Yes.
And at that time, Siad Barre severed his relationship with the Soviet Union and moved toward the American side.
Right, he flipped. Well, in fact, it was earlier than that, right? It was after the fall of Haile Selassie in Ethiopia in the mid-1970s.
That is right.
They flipped sides. Before that, Ethiopia had been in the U.S. camp and Somalia had been in the Soviet camp, and then they totally flipped.
Indeed, that's what happened, and, the aftermath, you know, by the time 1988, then, you know, I mean, everybody here was looking the other way. Again, for example, the region that says that that Somalia, as a country, is a member of the Arab League, did not want to saw the Somaliland and still do see Somaliland's departure of the Union as a secession.
Yes.
It should be shunned and rejected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for the U.S., well, because Ethiopia was communist at that time, everybody was paying attention to the very real atrocities which were going on there. But I guess they didn't want to look at what was happening in Somalia, which was their ally.
That's right. You see, the Siad Barre, in his own stupidity, attacked Ethiopia, thought that when Mengistu Haile Mariam came to power and Haile Selassie fell, he thought that he could take the Somali Ethiopian region by force, so he began a war.
The Ogaden.
Yeah, in 1977.
Right.
And that one, he was defeated, by the Ethiopian army, supported by the, you know, by the Red Army. Of, can you imagine, the Red Army was there, and East Germans and Cubans and some South Yemenis.
As military advisors.
No, real combat units.
Oh, yes?
Yes.
Well, Cubans, yes. I don't know about Soviets.
And East German.
Mm-hmm.
And the Somali units were beaten to death.
Yes.
And by that time, it was somewhat strange. That was during the Carter administration. And it was strange that the Red Army, by that time, for the first time, came to the African continent and actually become a part of a combat. But then nobody did anything. And eventually, when Siad Barre began dealing with Somaliland, everybody looked the other way. You know, when he destroyed the city of Hargeisa.
Right, because I mean, I followed the news, and I was not aware of it at the time. I was aware of the Ogaden crisis, and I was aware of the starvation in Ethiopia and so on, but I was not aware of what was happening in Somaliland in 1988.
Yeah, it was sad. It was unbelievable. We rebuilt the city now. You know, it's a whole different ball game now, without any international support.
Hmm.
And you could see every day there is a new hotel opening in downtown Hargeisa. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't want to make it sound like a great city. I mean, it needs all kinds of support. But, you know, people who go there, you know, here from the U.S. and the world, you know, I have seen even some tourists the last time I was in Hargeisa from Europe, you know, Italians, Germans, Norwegians, you know. I mean, but at least they can't find good hotels, and there is peace, as a matter of fact. There is nobody fighting there, and nobody's going to shoot you at you. I mean, you know, so people were coming.
Mm-hmm.
Although the situation is becoming very tense, as you know, because of the emergence of this Islamic extremists, you know.
Yes.
And yeah.
Well, there's been some recent political controversies, which I'd like to discuss. But first, maybe you could just explain a bit about how did you manage to rebuild your city without any international aid? I mean, that's quite an accomplishment.
Well, I mean, you know, people came back, and somehow, somewhere, you know, everybody claimed it's, you know, the former location of what's left of their houses. What did help us, really, basically, is the money that came from the diaspora.
Mm-hmm. People working where? In Europe, for the most part?
In Europe, basically in the Middle East and Europe. Mm-hmm. And Canada and the U.S., but these are phenomenon, the U.S.A. Now, this is rather new, but at that time it was the Middle East and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people, you know, somehow, you know, invested, you know, I mean, no matter what they managed. It was a matter of rebuilding a family house to begin with.
Right.
You know, a small house. I mean, nothing is fancy. I mean, the roads are all broken and what have you, but that's not the only African city.
Yes.
That looks like that.
That's true.
But it has been rebuilt. It has been rebuilt, and now you have first-class hotels, so clean you'll be surprised.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, and so, you know, really, I mean, you sleep in those hotels in Hargeisa, you don't miss anything.
Okay, so when did the Somali National Movement, that was the name of the liberation struggle, correct? The Somali
SNM. Yes.
When did it take up arms?
1981.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And finally, achieved victory in 1991.
10 years of army struggle by the SNM. Mm-hmm. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty close to them. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And at the same time, this was when the warlords began to emerge in
Somalia,
in Somalia proper, so to speak. And you know, there was the famous Black Hawk Down incident, and there was the apparently mass starvation, which prompted the U.S. military intervention of what I believe was 1992, 93.
Yep.
So, what was happening in Somaliland at this time?
At that time, we were just busy trying to pick up, you know, I mean, you know, the parts, you know, to put the place together. And the Republic already was there in place. Let me see. Yes, because 1991. You know, I mean, you did mention, you know, the Operation Restore Hope, which really was magnanimous on the part of President Bush first, you know, senior. He's the one who came up with that, you know, after he came, you know, victorious from in 1990 from the Middle East when Kuwait was liberated from Saddam Hussein. And he instituted what really I consider to be one of the finest gestures from the American people and the government. The president was so, you know, victorious, and he at that time declared what he called the New World Order. And according to the New World Order, he saw what was happening in that place. You know, I mean, kids dying and what have you. Anybody who saw, for example, things that by the international media like the CNN, I mean, it was unbelievable. And he did that in you know, with good intentions, but unfortunately, it ended disastrously. The man who was there running that thing, you know, called General Mohammed Farah Aidid,
right,
was the head of the SNC, Somali National Congress, he used to call it. And the SNM actually assisted him in creating the SNC military wing to fight Siad Barre in the south. You know. Mm-hmm. We gave him our own officers, our own ammunition, and real training for his people. The understanding was between the two political movements at the time to get rid of Siad Barre, sit down together, and come up with some acceptable order to both sides. But he never, you know, Black Hawk Down, you know, and all kinds of things, and they began fighting each other. Unfortunately, the major clan in that part of that of Somalia, which is, you know, Mogadishu and its environs and around, is called the Hawiya clan, and it became a fighting between the Hawiya clan, and still today it's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that, you know, I mean, some of us took a much more cynical view of George H.W. Bush's intervention and saw it as a means to secure, you know, there's a strategic choke point there at the bottom of the southern end of the Red Sea, which could be used to block off the world's oil. And I think it was perceived that there was a power vacuum, which could be filled by Islamic radicals or what have you, and that it was necessary to get some kind of military presence there to fill the power vacuum.
Well, you know, I mean, when you're talking about, the strategic goals, you know, I mean, you could put them any which way you want. I mean, the U.S. action at the time, and in many other times, was a little devoid of strategic, you know, I mean, interest. It cannot be, but he could have, you know, sit around and wait, you know, and ask Arabs, you know, and Africans to do something about it. Yes, remember, Berbera, which is now our Somaliland's major port,
yes,
was a Red Army air and, you know, naval base,
mm-hmm,
given by Siad Barre to the Russians,
mm-hmm,
during the Russian era.
Right.
Today, the things they left in the underground air, we cannot even clean them up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the issue was, yes, strategically located, no doubt about that. Some would say oil, but there was no oil there at the time. Again, strategically, for the third time, I can tell you, because it's too close to the Middle East and to the Persian Gulf, where the oil was coming from and still coming from. So I cannot divorce strategic thinking from his action, but nonetheless, I think he did do a fantastic job by stopping the fighting at the time and feeding the children and dying mothers.
Mm-hmm. And yet the fighting certainly continued.
Unfortunately, yes. And ended up with Black Hawk down.
Yes.
You know, 18 American Rangers died and 72, you know, injured.
Okay, so at the same time that, for lack of any other words, Somalia proper was being torn apart by the warlords, Somali land was rebuilding from,
yes,
from a period of war.
That's a fact.
Yeah. And then we could fast forward nearly 20 years to the current situation. And I believe it was June of 2006. The Islamic Courts Union established power in
Mogadishu.
In Mogadishu, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was they brought a modicum of stability there, but under extremely draconian terms, imposing their very harsh interpretation of Sharia law. And this prompted the U.S. to back up the Ethiopian intervention of that December,
mm-hmm.
which ousted them, but merely succeeded in reigniting the war.
Yes.
So what has been the view of this whole chess game, which has been playing out from Somaliland? Who were you sort of rooting for in all of this conflict?
We were rooting for no particular faction at that time. What we were rooting was stability and order in the place. So they would not be a source for all kinds of extreme activities that could follow. And on the other hand, if they did stabilize and we got some people with some kind of, a modicum of brain or just, thinking, to talk to them and tell them, listen, we're not going to come back to that union. We were two independent republics. We chose this union by, freely. We withdrew from it freely. Let us not hold each other. Let us cooperate as two sisterly states. We simply cannot stop people and goods to and capital, to cross the boundaries. Nor can we omit the Somali language or obliterate the Somali culture. Why don't we cooperate accordingly, as brothers? That's what we have been still waiting for. So we really were not rooting for any particular group,
mm-hmm.
initially. But now, what followed? Now the emergence of this Islamic extremism, now this is a whole new ball game. They did attack us last October.
October, yeah, there were a series of suicide blasts in Somaliland.
A Shabab group.
Right, this Islamist insurgent group, yes.
That's right. And, attacked the presidency, attacked the Ethiopian consulate, which is, commercial affairs, which is just like an embassy, as a matter of fact, and the United Nations HQ in Hargeisa.
Mm-hmm.
And killed so many people and injured so many people.
Mm-hmm.
They kill Europeans before non-Muslims, and we know them. And we have a lot of them in our jail. Now, these people are actually controlling the Somalia proper in many ways. This government, which is called the Transitional Federal Government, is the second transitional, this is the third transitional federal government. The first one was created in Djibouti in year 2000.
Right.
It collapsed.
Right.
Then the second one was created in Kenya in a small town called Imbagati, which was headed by a former warlord, Abdullahi Yusuf. It collapsed. This is the third one, and it's not doing well. And I I don't want to be pessimistic or people think that it's sour grape from our side. We don't want, anybody to get hurt. As a matter of fact, we wish them success. But we wish them also, if they succeed, to be realistic and to deal with us as an equal state, because if they don't, nothing is going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. They cannot control us. They cannot attack them. Us, if they attack us, I don't think they will be glorious. I mean, victorious. I mean, there is no way they can be.
Okay, so why do you think that the Islamic Courts Union attacked Somaliland? Somaliland had not even been involved in the crisis in the south of the country.
Oh, because they want to create, they don't believe in international boundaries. The same way they were fighting Ethiopia, the same way they are saying they are going to attack Kenya. They believe in what they call the Somali Islamic Emirate.
Mm-hmm.
And they do believe Somaliland is the biggest enemy because it has a democratic constitution, which in their dictionary is equal to, you know, to denial of God and the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, first of all, we have to take care of Somaliland because they think it's a bridgehead against them.
Mm-hmm.
They call us the government of the Americans, Jews, and godless. All kinds of things.
Okay, but I mean, your government is not even recognized by Washington. So how could they accuse you of being a puppet of Washington?
Oh, simply they say you cooperate with Washington, and they say that you just deal with the West as if you are a part of the West. The West likes you because they don't want Islam to become, you know, the constitution of that emirate,
mm-hmm,
that they are thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
They think Somaliland is so pro-Western. That's what they are saying.
Mm-hmm.
So we are pro-Western. We don't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a crime?
Okay. So, well, what do you mean by pro-Western exactly?
I mean, simply, we are a democracy to the best of our ability. We do have a democratic constitution. We believe in human rights. We cooperate in any way, although we are not recognized as a state, but we uphold international law. You know, if we, anybody, you know, our relationship with Britain, particularly with the United States of America, we do so, we are excellent. Although there is a de facto diplomatic, you know, kind of contact.
Yes.
And you could say actually de facto recognition sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But not de jure.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So they just don't want that. They don't want the Americans to be in the area. They don't want any Western to be there. They don't want, you know, a political order that calls itself a democratic political order. They say democracy is a deception. It's a Western deception. It's anti-Islam and anti-Muslims.
Okay, I should say that
it's like Taliban.
Yes, I should say that it's 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, and we are speaking with Dr. Saad Noor, who is the North American representative of the government of the Republic of Somaliland, which is a de facto independent republic in what appears on most maps as Somalia. I wonder if you could tell us, what's the does Somaliland have a constitution?
Yes, we do.
And how long has the constitution been in play? When was it drawn up?
In the year 2000, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In 2000. All right. So from 1991 to 2000.
To I think it was about 2000-2001. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There was no constitution for the first almost 10 years.
We had a national charter. We have a national charter in the which was created in 1993, and it just eventually became a constitution.
Mm-hmm. So it was formalized as a constitution,
yes,
around 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So what is the stance or the wording in the constitution regarding questions of Islam, freedom of religion, etc.?
Well, you know, I mean, like, you know, like any Muslim nation, you know, except for Iran and Saudi Arabia, which are a theocracies, really, like this, you know, as you know very well. Our government, you know, Somaliland is governed according, you know, to a democratic constitution and a modern legal court within the Sharia framework. Sharia laws exist, but deal largely with religious and moral issues and do not supersede other courts.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what's an example of religious and moral issues?
Of marriage, inheritance, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. All right, but so is there a separate set of courts for these issues?
Yeah, these are personal affairs courts, you know, for example, which are run by people who are actually, on the one hand, know the Islamic, jurisprudence, rather, well-versed in Islamic jurisprudence.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, have other, secular legal education. So it's just at that level. Beyond that, it's just like any other courts, those local Sharia courts deal with those things. They cannot supersede, that. They cannot supersede.
Oh, well, where does the line actually break down? I mean, who would actually have jurisdiction in cases of inheritance, divorce, child custody, etc.?
Well, this according that these things, according to the Sharia, then, for example, the marriages, the inheritance, those courts. But however, if things cannot be adjudicated through the Sharia courts for one reason or the other, then they go to the elementary, secondary, tertiary courts.
The civil courts.
Civil courts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Sharia courts exist more to adjudicate rather than to rule.
Yes.
And then if they fail to adjudicate, then the case would go to the civil courts.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and is I would imagine there's some acknowledgement in the Constitution of Islam on some level.
Yes, indeed. That like many all those republics that I mentioned, you could look even today to Afghanistan's constitution, Pakistan's, Egypt, Yemen, anywhere, Libya, Mauritania. It is just that say that the religion is of the land is Islam, and the Constitution cannot contradict the basic beliefs of the and philosophical underpinnings, or its philosophical underpinnings should be within the basics of the Islamic religion. In other words, it's based on that ethos.
Yes.
Yeah.
And are there provisions for freedom of religion?
This is a very good question. Everybody in that place, 99.9999% are Muslims.
Right.
Accordingly, that issue is a mute issue, I think, but it should have to... There are people who are, for example, Christians.
Right. I would imagine there's at least a small Christian minority.
But they are tiny, yeah. Nobody hears about them or wherever they are in that area, but I'm sure that this is one of those things that eventually will one day or the other come to the fore within the context of human rights.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is sort of a still developing situation, a developing question.
Yes.
So, all right, let's talk about some of the recent, we talked about the suicide blast, which took place last October,
mm-hmm.
And there's been some other instances of violence and unrest, certainly nothing on the scale of what's been happening in southern Somalia or Somalia proper, but which are perhaps worrying in terms of... indicating that the violence in the rest of Somalia could begin to spread to Somaliland. For instance, there's been a certain amount of violence, I understand, around the elections which are coming up between the various parties.
Yeah.
When are the elections scheduled for?
In September.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there have been no violence around the elections and what have you, but there is a great deal of commotion regarding, the opposition and the ruling party.
Right.
But nobody was killed in that, as a matter of fact. There are flare-ups here and there, like in any other society, that in areas where certain clans may disagree on the possession of certain lands or wells or what have you. But on the scale of violence that comes as a result of a political disagreement, that has not happened. But there are commotions, and there are disagreements, and there are, you know, all kinds of political posturing. We know how to deal with those. They never get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Never, ever.
Mm-hmm.
We have been there. We know what it means. Everybody will say, there are people even Hargeisa today, Bill. If you go to their house and say, look, I'm going to take your house, they say, are we going to fight over this? They say, it's not worth dying for it. Let us keep the peace and try to come up with some kind of accommodation.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been some things which I've read about, there's been this move on the part of the sitting president, Dahir Riale, to postpone the elections for several months, which has been met with some controversy.
Yes, indeed.
So why did he choose to do that?
Well, I mean, that's what the opposition would say that, but again, the government has its own version. The government's version is just that there are things that had to be completed prior to holding the election. For example, like voter registration,
mm-hmm.
which has been happening. But unfortunately, for one reason or the other, no final conclusion has been reached thus far on the outcome of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Legally, it has been stipulated that no election should take place prior to the completion and certification of the voter registration.
Mm-hmm. And yet the opposition has been protesting the postponement, and there's been a certain amount of, you know, street protests and so on in the capital.
Indeed, there is. So, I mean, incumbency comes with its own problems, sometimes right, sometimes wrong. The government is being accused of being sluggish, you know, I mean, saying it's taking its own sweet time. Using certain undemocratic techniques for arresting people and what have you. Government is saying, no, this is a matter of just withholding, you know, law and order, and there are people who are out of line.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those things, as you know, it happens. You know, there is no, there is that gray area in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either group could err, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
But because the government has the means of violence, constitutionally, you know, I mean, the army and the police and the security forces, normally when it enforces, it bites. And that biting, unless it's fully justified, always brings all kinds of anger and rejection.
Yes.
So yes, it is a democracy. We are going through a very delicate time. I say that political hiccups. I think we will go through it, and we will have it as usually done the right way.
Mm-hmm. And then, as you say, there's been some clan violence, land conflicts, and so on in the countryside.
One small area, not far away from the capital. And it has been a simmering dispute for a long time, which, you know, this dispute goes back to the Siadbre period.
Right.
Because some people are saying that, look, you know, our wealth and our, you know, this is the agricultural part of the country, saying that, you know, their farms and wells and some of their housing area and their habitat were given to another clan which was loyal to Siadbare.
Right.
And thus far, so far they say nobody has really looked into it and came up with the right solution for it. And it has been tried. It's one of those sensitive things, but there are all kinds of groups working on it right now to solve it once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Through mediation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but, you know, you have to mediate, you know, it's give and take.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and most worrisome, although fortunately this hasn't happened for a long time, but 2 years ago in 2007, there were clashes between, or border skirmishes between Somaliland and Puntland.
Correct.
Yeah, so what was that all about?
The problem is just that Puntland, see, first of all, the name Puntland is a new name. The word punt was first of all used by the ancient Egyptians when they went to the Horn of Africa for the first time. So they took that name, Puntland. Puntland means, according to the ancient Egyptians, the whole Horn of Africa, especially the area that is next to the sea, begin from the Sudan, Eritrea, and, you know, Djibouti, Somaliland, Somalia, that's what they call, you know, frankincense area.
Yes.
And somebody come up with this to create in 19, I think that was 1987, was it? Something like that, you know, I mean, time flies. What was it? Not 19. Yeah, 1987.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, what they was. And the issue is just they use Puntland, the name of that northeastern region of Somalia, which is inhabited by one major clan called the Harti. Some of the Harti are also on the Somaliland side, according to the international boundaries created by the Anglo-Italian Agreement, I think, of the, you know, in the 1980s. I'm sorry,
1880s. Yes. Yeah.
And these guys are saying we are creating a state which is based on ethnicity. I mean, clan land. Boundaries in Africa, never, when the Europeans were making, clans were not taken into consideration. So there are Isaacs, for example, who are the majority group of Somaliland, who live in Ethiopia and in Djibouti. There are also some of their people who live in the Somali region with Ethiopia. But when it came to Somaliland, they said, no, we will not accept the international boundaries between Somalia and Somaliland.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, because our cousins live there. We told them it's not a matter of cousins. Everybody's cousin is living, you know, across international boundaries in Africa. Ours also live in Djibouti and Ethiopia. And yours live in Ethiopia. Why Somaliland only? We're taking it. But we told them you cannot do it that way. Nothing can be done that way.
Now, there was some speculation that oil companies might have been arming the Puntland militia seeking to extract oil in Somaliland's territory. Were you aware of this theory?
Yes, we know that. We sent them away. We told them they cannot come.
Do you know which oil companies might have been behind this?
I think they were the Canadian, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some Canadian and maybe some Australian.
Mm-hmm.
And we told them you cannot come, and simply they can't because, you know, and then the skirmish, what happened is just, you know, part of the place they took from Somaliland, you know, the capital of the Soul region, which is called Las Anot, they took that in year 2003, attacked it while the president, Dahir Kahin, was there. He escaped, you know, and they occupied it. We told them to leave it. They refused. Eventually, we took it back without killing anybody because they were fighting among themselves.
The Puntland people were.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we have now the capital, Las Anot, and we are redeveloping it, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a lot of problems. Really, there is no state as such there, but they are better than Somalia proper.
Yes.
And again, they have been infiltrated heavily by the Islamists, the extremists.
The leadership of Puntland has?
No, the people on the land, generally speaking. For example, the port of Bosaso basically is really, I mean, it's just, you know, full to the hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, the Islamists are there, and, you know, they don't even hide.
And yet, it seems that the pirates are operating out of Puntland.
And then the pirates is the extra problem.
Yes, but the pirates and the Islamists are not allied. In fact, they seem to be antagonistic.
Well, you know, when it comes to command and control, they are not allies. When it comes, you know, to cooperating on the clan level, very difficult to discern.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the issue here is just that it has been said time and again that the leadership of Puntland, you know, have been involved in the piracy itself.
And yet they've also at least made some token efforts to crack down on the pirates.
That's what they say. Actually, I hate to accuse anybody, and I'm not saying that. You know, it has been said that this appointed president, lately appointed, their president, has been considered for a long time, you know, some kind of leader, or what do you call a godfather of pirates.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It has been said, I'm not accusing him, but it has been said time and again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's known to others also, you know. So the issue is that Puntland is there. They saying that they are part of Somalia, but at the same time, they are careful at this point, and they are trying to hold on what they have, because they are mainly a Darod group of the Somalis, and there is no great deal of trust between them and the Hawiyas.
Okay, now it should be said that Puntland has not declared its independence from
Somalia. No.
Right.
No, they're still flying that flag, and they're using sometimes their own false money and whatever. Somaliland, we had, you know, our own currency, the Somaliland shilling.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. For the last something, when was that? The last maybe 10, 12, as a matter of fact, yes, from the mid-90s, as a matter of fact.
You've been minting it in Somaliland?
No, we minted outside, but with reputable people in Europe.
Huh.
I mean, it cannot be falsified, and it has been actually, strangely enough, if I may say, it has been stable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's based in one way or the other by the dollar, but it has been very stable. I mean, relatively speaking, very stable and dependable, the Somaliland shilling.
Hmm.
You know, we have the flag, we have the currency, we have the army, we have the police, we have the intelligence service. You know, I mean, we have the national anthem. We're at peace. But where is the recognition? It's just tough.
All right, well, Puntland is not, while it is not declared independence, it still is effectively independent. I mean, it's running its own affairs. It's not a part of the, it's not under the transitional federal government or under the Islamic Courts Union or any of the other factions which have been vying for control.
Yes, correct. They although they cooperate and, you know, with the government in Mogadishu, particularly when Abdullahi Yusuf, you know, that last president who was pressured to get out,
mm-hmm.
was there because Abdullah Yusuf is the founder of Puntland.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And he was replaced by the current transitional federal government president, Sharif Sheikh Ahmed.
That's right.
Who was formerly the leader of the Islamic Courts Union.
That is right.
Which is rather an irony.
It's an irony. And a man who was chased from Mogadishu by the Ethiopian army, invading Ethiopian army. And now when he was elected, appointed in Djibouti, his first trip was to Addis Ababa.
Yes.
So, it's politics.
Yes.
Because, you know...
Well, it seems that, Ethiopia, probably with U.S. connivance, I would imagine, decided to put him in power to try to buy peace with the Islamist insurgents.
But they cannot.
Which has failed, largely.
Yep.
Yes.
It cannot.
Yes,
it cannot.
Yes.
It cannot, and we are all worried because the situation is tough there. And again, everybody is saying that, you know, I mean, this is the best chance that Somalia had ever had. You see, the international community, somehow, somewhere, one would think, is really in a state of daydreaming. I don't know why that is happening.
Okay, explain what you mean. Daydreaming? How?
Because they are dreaming of a unitary government of Somalia. That is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What they should be really dreaming of is just to say, listen, Somalia and Somaliland, leave Somaliland alone. After all, they are not here. They are not talking to you. You don't need them. They don't need you. Why don't we help you to take care of your business and create your own government as it was prior to the union in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Somalia, you know, Italiano. So, we will help you with that. But nonetheless, time and again, they are saying we have to have a central government in Somalia.
All right, now, who is saying this? United
States? International community, including the USA.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When we ask them, and we say, what do you mean by this government you are describing? Does it include us? They say, no. Somaliland is still there. But there's no guarantee. You know, if you create that kind of a government centrally, these people who will be able to say, well, Somaliland is a part of us, because they have refused thus far to admit that Somaliland is a separate entity. They say, no way.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, no matter what color they have,
mm-hmm.
Islamist, no Islamist, Democrat, you know, demagogue, I don't care. They refuse.
Mm-hmm.
But the international community is still trying to put Humpty Dumpty together.
Right.
But it cannot be put together.
Right.
We need somebody who just say, let us, you know, call a spade a spade.
Okay, so what challenge does the pirate crisis and the whole showdown between the pirates and this international naval task force, which has been assembled to confront them, what challenges does this situation pose to Somaliland's independence?
To us, at this point, there is no challenge as such. You know, our part of the Gulf of Aden, which is really the critical aspect of it, you know, I mean, coming from Bab el-Mandeb, you know, and passing Djibouti and coming to the Gulf of Aden Gulf of Aden, which is between us and Yemen. I mean, the real strategic area is there. There has never been any hijacking in that area, which is closer to our shores. We do have our small coast guard. Second, the international task force, which operates from Djibouti, is pretty close to us. So to us, there is no, you know, challenge as such. They tried to come and operate from Somaliland twice, the guys from Puntland. Both times we arrested them. They are serving in our jail now, or jail.
Pirates. Mm-hmm.
Two groups of them each time we sentenced them to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they are there. We are keeping them.
Okay, so what do you make of the claim that they aren't really pirates, that it's actually the Somalia Volunteer Coast Guard, and they are protecting Somalia's coast from illegal fishing, illegal waste dumping, toxic waste dumping, etc.?
No.
Does this have any legitimacy in your view?
You know, I mean, there's some legitimacy to it when it comes to fighting the illegal fishing and dumping. Because there have been, I mean, the place was raped, really. I mean, the kind of the fishing, illegal fishing that was taking place, it was unbelievable. They destroyed the coral reefs.
All right, now this was when? You're using the past tense. It's not continuing?
They still continue, but it's getting lesser since those guys came.
Right. So there you go.
You know, I mean, who's going to? I mean, they chased a lot of them. I mean, they, you know, I mean, last week they took two Egyptian trawlers who are fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this are what is the Asians, Asia, particularly Thailand, China, India. These are the worst people, you know, who were and the Chinese, as a matter of fact, in many ways. So the issue, yes, it began as a resistance against those because they were cutting their nets.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And all kinds of things. So they said, what shall we do about them? And they began saying, let's harass them. Eventually, they found out they could take them over. Yes, there are a lot of people who used to be in the Somali Coast Guard with some kind of a know-how, and that's true. But the question is this, these are the origins, but now it's becoming a real thriving business and a real menace
mm-hmm.
to the international trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the solution for this bill is not on the sea, it's on the shore.
Okay.
We have to solve the problem on land.
How?
By creating some kind of order in that Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the international community talks about. But everybody knows how much that it will take. You have to consider that place like Afghanistan and Pakistan. Although, and Yemen is another problem again. You know, these issues, you know, I mean, look, the area that should be patrolled is about 1.1 million square miles. How are you going to do it?
You mean at sea?
At sea?
Yes.
Who would do that? If you bring the whole U.S., if you bring the total U.S. Fifth Fleet, it won't fit it.
Right.
So what are you going to do? So the issue has to be solved on land.
Okay, so how can that happen? How can, I mean, they've been trying since 1991 to impose some kind of stability in Somalia, and they've completely failed.
Two things we tell our friends, you know, I mean, not officially, but, you know, when I'm talking to friends, yeah. I'm not talking about any discussion with the government here or whatever, but some of a lot of people here in Washington who are very much interested in this business were all actually well qualified to say a word or two about it. But the question is just that we would say that talking about it and doing something, talking thing, will not do anything. You have to really come up with a comprehensive policy and put behind it what it takes in men and material. That's the only way you can do it.
All right. So
there is no heart for that.
And
sometimes I jokingly say, failing to do that, why don't you recognize us and deputize us? Who will bring peace to that? I'm not kidding you.
Well, aren't you afraid of getting sucked into the maelstrom?
Listen, we are all Somalis. We cannot outrun it. Look, we know everybody and his grandmother. Nobody can lie to us.
Because, I mean, this is my fear, actually, is that this is what I've been trying to get around to in this line of questioning. Is my fear is that now that when the crisis is just on land, to a certain extent, they can just kind of let it fester. But when it's actually posing a threat to global commerce on the seas and the choke point for the oil coming out of the Red Sea, you know, there's going to be some kind of an imperative to get Somalia under control. And every intervention by the international community to try to get Somalia under control has only made things worse for the past 20 years. So if they attempt to, if the pirates are using Puntland and they might attempt to try to go into Puntland and impose some kind of order there, they might perceive Somaliland as the next domino, so to speak.
I mean, the pirates? Hello?
Yeah. No, I mean the international community, some kind of intervention force or...
Well, we could assist to a great extent. This whole thing has been from outside and half-heartedly. If, for example, the international community say, first of all, Somaliland is safe, we have to see to it that it remains safe. Two, we should see what we can do to utilize the know-how of the Somalilanders. Even when it comes to the reconciliation of the clans, we created Somaliland through a reconciliation conference, you know, in 1993. Right there, that's where we created. They said it took us only 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought every clan and sub clan to the level of household represented in that conference in Borama.
Mm-hmm.
Took 4 months, we come up with a president, a charter, and a republic.
Mm-hmm.
Still, we are using the same structure.
Mm-hmm. So you think this could be a model which could work in the rest of Somalia?
When it comes to that, we have a PhD in that business. I'm telling you, I'm not kidding you.
Unfortunately, Dr. Noor, it's 1:30, and we need to be off the air.
This.
I told you it would go fast, didn't I?
I can't believe it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Saad Noor, North American representative of the de facto independent Republic of Somaliland. This has been a really fascinating discussion, and I hope that we can continue it at some later date.
Thank you very much, Bill, and I have enjoyed it immensely.
And I hope we'll do it again. So let's stay in touch.
I'm not even sleepy, Bill.
I told you, right?
Okay.
You probably had a lot of coffee at 11:30, right?
Not really. Water.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.